fish and chips and vinegar, vinegar, vinegar. Fish and chips and vinegar, pepper, 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 salt. Don't throw your junk in my backyard, my backyard, my backyard. Don't throw your junk in my backyard, my backyard's full.
One bottle of pop, two bottle of pop, three bottle of pop, four bottle of pop, five bottle of pop, six bottle of pop, seven bottle of pop, pop.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It. I am your host, Ben Sargent, and today we will be talking to none other than fisherman, chef, and restaurateur Chris Sell from our beloved local Chippy in Park Slope.
That was my really bad attempt at an English accent. So I'm here with Chris on Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It, and Chris is the owner and sometimes chef of our local Chippy, right? The Chip Shop, which is an unbelievable fried fish fish and chips hangout, right? And it's That's modeled right. after like the real thing. It is the real thing.
It is. We've also got a pub as well, which has all the beer and the whiskers to go with it.
Got it. Got it. And you're, you're a rugby player, yeah?
Ex-rugby player.
Okay. I went to this place last night because it's one of my favorites. And the place is lined with sort of English memorabilia, but you're also sort of like a rocker, an ex-rocker, like... The Clash and...
I'm an old punk rocker,
The Ramones kind of, fit in there?
The Ramones, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, it kind of falls into the logo and the theme of the place, really, a bit too much. I'm a bit sad for that.
No, I love that aspect of it. I love that. tell me about the tradition of the chippy, or a chippy, I guess.
I grew up with them. I really don't remember not having a chippy in my life at one time or another. And my earliest memory is walking down the street and being shown how to open a bag of chips without opening them all up.
And clarify for us, because chips in American is very different from English chips.
French fries are frozen processed potato product.
Over here.
Chips are potatoes that have been peeled and cut to 14 millimeters. And fried.
And they're scrumptious.
Yeah, they're real potatoes.
They're incredible.
Yeah.
Tell me about this tradition of curry. What's up with how did that become an English thing?
Well, a little bit after we invaded America, we invaded India. They kicked us out.
I'm glad you guys have toned it down a little.
they kicked us out at a later date, but we sort of morphed into their food. And then after they kicked us out, we invited a load of Indians to come to England and emigrate there.
Right.
And they started up curry shops everywhere.
And steal some of their foods as well.
Yeah, well, in the 70s. I mean, they really...
Oh, it was the 70s.
Okay. They really opened up curry shops everywhere.
And the tradition is now in England, or modern tradition, is you take your chips, your French fries, and you dip them in the curry. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, growing up, that was a thing we did.
It's really good. I love it.
Yeah, it's excellent.
And your curry is fantastic.
Thank you.
And tell me about mushy peas. Mushy or mushy, or how do you say it?
Mushy peas. They're not just peas that have been overcooked. They're actually a marrow-fat dried processed pea. So it's almost like a split pea.
Right, because they almost have like a baked beans, refried beans consistency, and almost a tiny bit of flavor. But they're like so green. I don't understand how they get to be so green.
Well, we get them out of a can, so we have no impact on the green.
Right, but, whether they're green or not green.
I'm not sure how they got green in the first place.
All right, and tell us what makes the perfect fish and chips.
Fresh fish. Okay. Fresh fish, fresh batter, clean oil.
Okay. And how often does one have to change your fryer later to keep fresh oil?
We change the oil twice a week.
Okay. And that's peanut oil, or what do you use? Vegetable?
Soybean oil. Cholesterol free.
Okay. Okay.
Trans fat free.
Got it. And as far as your batter goes, you brought some here, which is awesome. What is your batter all about on a regular basis? Batter recipe.
Basic flour and water recipe. Okay. I mean, it's other people put beer in it, other people put soda in it.
Mm-hmm.
We got flour, we got water, we got baking powder to make it lighter, we got malt vinegar for a bit of flavor and to crisp it up. Quite a lot of salt to give it a good salty, crispy batter flavor. And then we put a little bit of yellow food color in for that golden brown.
I mean, it is beautiful. When you see it come out of the fry later, it is like one of... I mean, I always talk about golden nuggets on the show, but it really is a golden nugget.
Yeah.
No, and it's a big one, too. Like, my fish... I had the cod, and my date last night had the... what did she have? I think she had haddock, yeah?
Right.
And they were huge.
Yeah.
It's a big piece of fish.
You know, we got to feed the people. I mean, we don't want people to go away hungry.
Okay. And then it comes on this amazing bed of chips, right? And tell me about the chip sauce versus vinegar, because I know you're an adherent to vinegar. Is that because of the region you're from?
No, I mean, salt and vinegar is what you put on your chips in England, okay. All over England. Every pub table you go to will have salt, vinegar, and ketchup on there.
Yeah.
You know, people put mushy peas in there, people put gravy on there, people put curry sauce on there.
Right.
And that's all just a matter of taste. I think most chippies in England will give you the option of curry sauce, gravy, or mushy peas.
Okay. So... my show, I generally, I'm always dealing with sustainability and all these things that are especially unpopular to fishermen, but you yourself are a fisherman.
Yeah.
So you can appreciate, at least you know about some of the problems that we're having, especially with cod. And I almost want to phrase the question like this. Why does it make more sense to open up a chippy in the United States versus in England nowadays? It's sort of a rhetorical question, because I know you know the answer.
Yeah, we started fishing in England, I mean, centuries and centuries and centuries ago.
Right.
And the Portuguese and the French and the Spanish also fish the British waters.
Okay.
And we fish them out. I mean, there is no real fish in England. I go fishing and we catch the odd fish. People go on skate trips and people go on dogfish trips.
Right, which are even overfished now too.
Yeah, but to actually go and target skate blows my mind. I'm over here, we catch with a parachute, fish. You throw it back.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
If you feel a bit hungry, you maybe take one or two home, but
right.
You know, not very often.
And what's the... So on the menu, you have you have haddock and you have cod. And is the cod is there traditionally because, what? I mean, you think it's the better fish for frying?
Cod and haddock weekly is good. I mean, okay. They're both great. They're
I had different. Both of them. I really thought, I'm trying to think which was the flakier of the two. I thought that the cod was more flavorful, but I thought that the haddock kind of flaked in a way that I liked.
I go between the two. I mean, I have the luxury of seeing the fish come in, so I look at it and think, oh, I'll have haddock today or I'll have cod today. It's all fresh, so.
So, okay, now this is sort of off the record, but of course it's on the record. Chris sometimes comes in with his daily catch, which literally is your daily catch. And it doesn't, there's no mailing list. You're not going to get lucky there. He's not going to inform you. But if you happen to come on the right day, you might actually, you might get to eat some fish that special ordered that Chris has caught. Is that right?
Yeah, very rarely.
Yeah.
But I generally fish, I do fish for myself and my family.
Right.
And for fun.
And you're, I mean, so you go out on these boats, right? And you, like, how often do you get to actually catch fish?
Well,
being a restaurateur and being a dad and
I fish once a week at least.
That's amazing.
All the way apart from maybe February and March, I don't fish. And at least once a week, sometimes twice.
I mean, that's a lot of fishing by most people's standards.
Yeah, but you know,
mine, and I fish a lot.
I need some release, you know. Right. It's like I work 6 or 7 days a week.
Right.
If I didn't do something that wasn't work or family related, I'd go nuts.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's what I do.
Right. And how many chip shops are there at this point?
There's two chip shops.
Okay. With expansion in the
Well, we had one in Bay Ridge we had to close down last year. Unfortunately, there was no business there.
Really?
So
I saw that you had the recession special and I think that's pretty interesting just because fish and chips, as far as I know, traditionally was, you know, not an item for the affluent, but it was a very accessible sort of not cheap, but it was cheap, wasn't it?
Yeah, we're fairly inexpensive.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, for a restaurant that sells fresh fish in New York, we sell it for $12 or $13.
Okay.
And most restaurants' fish starts at $15, $16, $17.
Right, totally.
So,
affordable piece of
fish. We give a decent sized piece. You know, it's value for money.
I couldn't eat the whole thing.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. It's value for money. You know, yeah. I think that's the key to.
Yeah.
Successful restaurant business.
And my date, she ate the whole thing. I was appalled. I'm just kidding. And I don't know. I mean, I guess my question to you now is there any fear in your mind as a fisherman, as a recreational fisherman, that the stocks here in the United States of cod, of pollock, of haddock, are in jeopardy, that they are in the way they are in England?
No. I mean, I see the reports from last year. They had a cracking year in Montauk on cod.
Okay.
They caught record amounts recreationally.
Right.
I went to the Fish Police's website today.
Yep.
And there's no limits on cod, haddock, and pollock. You can catch as much as you want.
Right.
And that's, for me, that's crazy. You know, I fish for fun, and I fish for food.
So you think there should be some limits, even on the recreational fishermen?
Yeah. I mean, why does somebody need to go and catch 300 or 400 or 500 pounds of fish?
I couldn't agree with you more.
You know, they should. I mean, 10 cod will probably give you 150 minimum pounds of fish.
Yeah.
I mean, how much fish can you eat?
Yeah. No, that's true.
True. And if you want to fish commercially, get a commercial license and then go and do it that way.
Right. I just realized Chris is here. He's got his legs crossed, but I just saw his red Doc Martens, which are the sign of his ska, punk, heavy metal raw days.
Misspent youth.
I just saw it. There it is. I want to talk a little bit about what happened in England. I mean, do you think that the regulations just weren't, was it too late? Is that sort of what happened?
Yeah, far too late.
Far too late.
I mean, when I started fishing, ocean fishing in the 70s, in the UK, there were no regulations.
Okay.
And such was it with striped bass fishing here.
Is that like the romance of fishing? Like, people are afraid to put some kind of restriction on this thing that's, you know, so many novels have been written about, and it's just kind of like the last frontier.
Well, I think they realized fish were running out, and then they put the restrictions on.
And at that point...
I mean, in the States, I think they've been a lot wiser. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I absolutely support conservation. I don't understand how they get their numbers.
Right.
But I support it. And, you know, I think it's important that everybody follows it. But I wish they would also make the restrictions on the recreational fishermen something in line with the commercial fishermen. Right. I mean, we have to catch a 22-inch fluke, but they can keep 14-inch flukes.
Chris says that, and yet, do you have a license?
I don't. I've only fished.
Busted.
I've only fished from the shore.
I'm exactly the same
at the beginning of this year.
I'm just giving you a hard time. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're a boat fisherman. I'm a boat fisherman. It doesn't matter. Yeah, doesn't matter. Trying to nail you on the air, but you're a boat fisherman. So actually, he's exempt from the.
When I start off beginning of next season off the Rockaway Wall, I'll buy my $150 lifetime license.
And you have to join the Brooklyn Fishing Derby.
I have to,
We got
to
get you in there.
Oh, for sure.
Because we were catching fish. It was unbelievable. This is Chris Sell from the Chip Shop. In Park Slope. We are really, really lucky to have you on the show, and it's been a pleasure already talking about the perfect golden little nugget.
Thank you.
Head down to the market at Billingsgate. Keys is pushing and shouting, they're a friendly bunch. Gotta get back to the chippy in time for lunch. The punters round here never complain, 'cause everyone knows each other in the main. Whether it's Codlace or Scampi, you lick your lips. Nothing to beat good old English fish and chips. The chippies are salt and battery, didn't you know? Was that cod and chips made to stay or go? Salt and vinegar, yeah, all wrapped in brown, 'cause we're the best chippy in this old town. If you're feeling adventurous, try squad or skate. Fancy a pickled onion on your plate. It's all fresh and filleted before it goes into fry. That's the truth, the whole truth without a lie. From early morning to late at night, just come on down to see us if you fancy a bite. You won't be disappointed, as it's all delish, and it makes you brainy, well so they say about fish. The chippies are salt and battery, didn't you know? Was that cod and chips made to stay or go? Salt and vinegar, yeah, all wrapped in brown, 'cause we're the best chippy in this old town. 'Cause we're the best chippy in this old town.
All right, we're back here. I'm like swigging on a nasty, cheap bottle of vodka. Gross. And my fisherman guest here is abstaining, so I feel like a real lush, but it's cool. and we are back another episode of Catch It, Cook It, Eat It. I'm talking to Chris Sell, who is the owner, proud owner of the Chip Shop, which is an awesome, awesome fish and chips joint in Park Slope. And let's talk England for a second, because I was sent off as a poor boy at the age of probably 15, 16 years old, forced into this, sent to England to a boarding school where, I mean, I didn't know the first thing about England. And then on the next thing I know, I'm on the rugby field being forced to play competitive rugby, getting my ass kicked. And you yourself are an ex-rugby player. Where did you grow up? What area, I guess?
I grew up in the town of Rugby.
Of Rugby.
Yeah, which is Rugby School, where the game started in 18...
So you can't really not play rugby.
No, that's right. There's no soccer team in our school, just rugby.
Is that true?
Rugby in the winter and cricket in the summer.
Wow.
And I hated cricket.
Cricket. I mean, that's an impossible sport. Baseball is hard enough. I mean,
cricket lasts for 3 days and usually ends in a draw.
It's awful.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
But rugby hurts.
Rugby's a good sport. I mean, the difference between rugby and football is in rugby you tackle, in football you hit.
Yeah, and it's hitting that I didn't like so much.
Well, the hitting's in football, not in rugby.
But it leaves a mark in rugby.
Well, it does, yeah, but it's a gentleman's sport, you know, it's...
But, you know, when you're in the high school level, right, I'm like 100, I don't even know if I was 100 pounds, but you're playing with kids who might be just under 200 pounds. The maturity level, you're kind of like, it's almost dangerous.
You have to learn to have to dodge a little bit.
You gotta dodge.
And jump up and outmaneuver them.
That's right.
Because the big kids are usually fat anyway, so you can run around them.
Right, yeah, that's true. But we had this one kid from Turkey, from Istanbul. And man, I didn't even attempt to hit the kid or tackle the kid or whatever. I just ran out of his way as quickly as possible.
Rugby's a game, especially if you're playing the forwards, where you can actually look to be doing an awful lot. When actually doing very little.
Is that true?
Yeah, because you're mostly playing support. You're not actually getting the ball and running with it. You're just helping everybody else.
I'm afraid I didn't really fool anybody. The coaches very quickly took me over to the sideline and said, you really need to play a lot harder. Oh, man. And then I have a friend who was, he played rugby in England and then switched over. But he said because he wasn't very good and he couldn't get any girls that way to American football.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then he was recruited. He's tiny. And he was recruited to play in Indiana or something like that for an American team.
Yeah.
And it was just hilarious. He was telling me about practice and he was like, you know, he was there on the sideline smoking cigarettes. And the coach came up to him and said, you know, this is really, you have to take this a little more seriously. Yeah, yeah. You may have gotten away with this in England because it was a club sport, but here...
I played rugby for the Village Lions in 1990. Which is in the village, New York City village.
Yeah.
And we used to drink beer at halftime. I mean, that's the game, though.
That's
customary,
right?
Yeah.
The beer drinking.
Beer drinking. Yeah. There's women around. It's very much a boys' game.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, thoroughly enjoyed it.
It's awesome. All right. Let's get back to the fish here. So, sorry, we got sidetracked by rugby. John Cabot returns from his transatlantic trip to the Newfoundland in 1497, saying that, you know, the seas are so full of cod that they actually sailed the boat, held the boat up.
Right.
And you could scoop them out with a basket or something. And that was, 1497. And now the populations of cod, I think it was, I'm trying to remember what the numbers are, but seriously diminished.
Yeah.
Right? To the point where I would imagine some of the shops have changed over to pollock or to haddock, right?
Yeah, we use cod and haddock.
Yeah.
I have not seen any proof that it's not a sustainable catch.
Okay.
Does any kind of a
seal come on the fish that you catch where you know where it's coming from?
It's all coming from Boston. It's all caught off. It's all caught in Massachusetts, I believe.
Bunch of liars. It's my hometown.
But it's reasonably priced. I mean, but I can buy pollock, and pollock is probably 50% cheaper than cod.
Right.
And it's not as good. And I'm just, I really do believe that the people who sell pollock are selling it because it's that much cheaper. They can make that much more money, and they're using sustainability as an excuse.
Okay. And and so you're talking about the United States right now, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, which makes a lot of sense to me, because obviously, you know, market price fluctuates, but if you're getting a fish that's like, you know, half of what you're paying now for cod, and you say it's for sustainable purposes, you're making half the, right, twice the markup.
Yeah, it's a good cop out. But I can buy cod, and as I say, the feds haven't put a limit on cod.
Okay.
And I think if there was a serious problem with sustainability, there'd be strict, but there'd be a moratorium on cod. You wouldn't be able to catch them.
Yeah.
Catch and release only. But there isn't.
Right.
And cod's very affordable. I mean, it's
affordable and really, really good for you. I was reading about something. It's like it's 80% protein and 3% fat.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, it's like it's funny because people think that fish and chips like might not be the best diet for you, but dieting food for you, but actually it's a pretty lean.
There are worse things to eat.
A lot worse. And you're also famous for the fried Twinkie, the fried Mars bar, the fried
we've been credited with frying the first Twinkie,
which you really, I feel like you really did start that trend over here in this neighborhood.
We fry a lot of crazy stuff,
right?
Put my hand out there. What I did was, we just did it as a joke. Okay. We weren't serious. And then we started getting all this press. So we did more, and we got more press.
What did you start with? What candy bar?
The Mars bar was the first, but that's a Scottish invention.
Okay.
And then we fried the Twinkie and stuck it on the menu because we figured, it's an American icon. We can maybe destroy that. Right. But then that got press in the Times, and we just went from there. And we started.
And how's the Twix bar?
The Twix is great.
Yeah, it holds up.
Yeah, it holds up well.
Really?
We put loads of crazies. We've got pizza on the menu right now, fried pizza.
Awesome.
Fried macaroni.
I want you guys to try, my favorite ice cream is the ice cream Twix bar. It looks like a Twix, but it's ice cream form. I want you to do like the Chinese version of fried ice cream, but taking that bar.
Yeah, why not?
Bring I'm going to bring you one.
I'll bring it down, I'll fry it for you.
Awesome. I mean... Like cod itself, there literally were wars started over the codfish.
Yeah, in Europe, definitely.
Unbelievable.
Well, the Portuguese and the Spanish and the French started coming into the British waters, and there was a big
I heard apart from like, I heard there. Global warming, birds, seals, and the Spaniards are the like four major excuses that a fisherman in England will use for why there's no cod left. They'll never say overfishing.
Well, yeah, they overfished it as well. I mean, that's the fifth reason that nobody talks about.
Exactly. And I mean, also Boston, Halifax, St. John, they were all, as far as I know, these were towns that were really helped by the cod industry. They became what they became because of it.
Well, they're still doing it now, aren't they? I mean, it's...
Yeah,
and I think obviously the commercial guys have quotas.
Okay,
and I think it's doing just fine.
Right. I also heard that it was somewhat responsible for the Caribbean slave trade. I know that book Cod. If you read Cod,
didn't know
this is like so, I haven't read it either. But apparently that a lot of the Caribbean slave trade was a result of this booming industry.
Oh God, I believe anything. I mean, those times were kind of cruel all the pretty way around.
Pretty cruel times, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know, nowadays, if you do have plans for expansion in the US as a franchise or something like that, do you think you would start bringing in different types of fish? What do you do as, because I know our demand for fish in the United States has gone way, way, way up. But are you, given that it's a tradition, cod is the tradition, are you negotiable? Will you fry your you know, striped bass if you have to?
We do specials. We do halibut every now and again.
Okay.
And we did buy some pollockin and sell it quite considerably cheaper than cod.
Right.
But we don't, you know, at the moment, there's no real reason to worry about it.
Okay.
I mean, if somebody were to come along and say, look, this is the deal. And, if the police were to, the fish police were to make strict limits and limit commercial fishing, and, you know, cod is inexpensive. It's not a really expensive fish right now. It's actually cheaper than haddock this week.
Okay.
Because I buy it on a weekly basis. You know, if and when it becomes so scarce that it's really, really, really expensive, I mean, it's going to drive the price up, and I won't be able to afford to sell cod.
Sure.
And then I'll figure out that, you know, all the junk fish that we used to have, like the monkfish used to be a garbage fish.
And the skate and the all skate, these
well,
things.
Well, the skate still is to a certain extent.
But now you see it on these, like, you know,
yeah, we'll be selling skate menus. And we'll be selling sea robins and you know, whatever else is the next one down the totem pole to be caught and enjoyed.
Exactly. I mean, I was sort of surprised by this idea of, I guess it's called, what do they call it, shifting baselines, which is the idea that, say, you're judging the fish populations on what your grandfather caught or your father caught, and so which is a way I've always done it. I've been like, well, there were more fish as I can remember, but they weren't that much bigger and they weren't that much healthier. Yeah. But the problem is, of course, that with the idea of shifting baselines, that what you should be doing is looking at how it was for your great 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 grandfather when he was fishing the same waters.
Right.
And I can say, even in my time, that we used to haul in Cape Cod in Pleasant Bay easily 40 or 50 flounder out of the bay. And there is not one flounder left in Pleasant Bay.
Right.
And I am directly responsible for that.
Well, you know they now have, you know, there's now a 12 inch limit and you're allowed two.
Right.
Two winter flounder.
Okay.
But before there wasn't. But I mean, back in the day, they didn't have.
They just didn't know.
Fish finders and all the gadgets they have nowadays to catch the fish.
Yeah.
I think fluke and flounder and porgies and black sea bass and striped bass and all the fish that we know and we love to catch.
Yeah.
There are strict catch limits, and I think that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, I want my daughter, who's four now.
Right.
Be able to go out and get herself a doormat of a fluke or a 3-pound porgy or a 6-pound sea bass. Yeah. I just want that to be able to happen.
To continue.
And so, you know, the conservation's important. And I'm glad that it's there in place. I'm glad that they did it sooner over here than they did in England.
Right.
And that it seems to be working. I mean, the striped bass population is going crazy now, where 20 years ago, there was no striped bass.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible to me because same thing, when I was a kid, to catch a striped bass out with my grandfather was a prize. Like, it was like, it never happened. And especially one of keeping size. It just never happened. And now, I mean, you know, people will, I don't know, 10, 15 fish a season of keeping size striped bass, you know?
We go out on the Caranan in Jamaica Bay at the beginning of the season.
I think I've been on that boat, yeah.
It's the best striped bass boat.
Do you know the captain's name by any chance?
Vinny.
I think I know the guy.
No, Vinny is the Marilyn Jean.
There isn't a Polish guy on board, is there?
I don't know.
Okay,
never mind. John, you go out with him and you start at 4 a.m., you catch some bunker, you fish till 6 and you're limited. The boat's limited out with, there's usually five of us, so it's 10 fish.
Right.
Then we catch and release, and you usually catch 8 or 10 keeper striped bass yourself per day.
Right. Which is awesome. I love these things. If anyone's out there is going, I would never, you know, never jump on one of those guided tour boats, whatever you call them, boats, right?
I go out on a boat called the Jet out of Sheepshead Bay.
Yeah.
And it's a serious fishing boat.
Yeah.
And you see the same faces every time. In fact, I'm going out on Friday on them. And they constantly give me results, and it's inexpensive. Right. It's $50 or something for a day out.
And I think it's so cool because you get to go with like every walk of life in New York, every nationality.
Every nationality, cops, firemen, garbage guys.
It's pretty fun.
Stockbrokers, lawyers, I mean, everybody. And it's just, on the Jet especially, it's people who are serious about fishing.
Yep.
And after they get to know you a little bit, they teach you the best way to fish and teach you how to tie your own rigs and show you the ropes. And I've been going for 6 years now. I've every blue moon in the middle of winter or the very beginning of the season, I get skunked.
Okay.
But I'm almost guaranteed to take home dinner.
Awesome. And I have to ask you this. Have you ever caught a cod?
I caught my first cod last year.
Is it boring?
It was on a different boat in February, and it was one of the best eating fish I ever had.
Yeah.
And I was catching ling. So after catching ling, catching a cod is very exciting. And I'm going out to Montauk this year for sure to go cod fishing.
Okay. And I mean, are they, they look sluggish. They look like a kind of lazy fish, but
it's not bluefish.
You know, nothing's bluefish.
You can go out and you can beat yourself up for 6 hours bluefishing. So you actually want to come back in.
Yeah.
And I don't keep a fish. I throw everything back.
You do.
But with codfish.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to keep it, and it's so fresh cod is. I've never had anything like it. Right. It was probably the best fish I've ever eaten.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you. I got to cut you short, but thank you so much for coming on the show. And all I can say is whenever you do come in with that fresh catch, let me know. Just call me. I'm giving you my cell number. I don't know about the rest of you, but I will be there for your personal fresh catch. You heard it here on another episode of Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It. I'm with Chris. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
All right.
Greasy fingers, greasy lips. Eat too many, get fat hips. I don't care. More fish and chips.
This episode was sponsored by TechServe. For more information, you can go to www.techserve.com.